Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett coming to you, as always, from the land of the rising sun, where it's the 20th of June, 2013. Tonight, we're joined on the line by, from the United States by NSA whistleblower Russell Tice, who's previously been on this program once before, so I'll invite you to the Corbett Report archives for that. He's also just given a very groundbreaking, very interesting interview with BoilingFrogsPost.com, so I will direct you there and include a link in the show notes to that interview, so you can listen to that conversation as well with Peter B. Collins and Sibel Edmonds. Russell Tice, thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, where do you even begin with all of the craziness that's happened in the last few weeks surrounding the NSA and what looks to be the blowing of the cover off of the mainstream cover-up of what's been going on for years now? And it looks like after years and years and years of trying to bring the public's attention to this, the mainstream news is finally catching up with you, or at least starting to. And of course, for people who don't know, I suggest that they go back and take a look at some of the previous work surrounding Russell Tice and what he's brought to the table from his work with the New York Times in what eventually became their expose of the NSA wiretapping, to his testimony to Congress, to his interviews with Keith Olbermann back several years ago, exposing much more than is even being admitted and exposed in the current Snowden scandal. So we're finally getting to the point where, the mainstream headlines are starting to catch up with what you've been talking about. Can you give us your impression on what's been released so far and what people are what's being talked about and what's not being talked about so far?
Well, I mean, I've noticed that what Mr. Snowden put out was one piece of the puzzle about Verizon going after or giving up the metadata on their communications. But what I think Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein, kind of leaked out herself was that was just a quarterly renewal of something that's been going on for a long time. And the other thing is that it's all the other telephone companies, the big telecoms as well, that are involved in this. So it's everything that's related to those FISA court orders. Now, you know, some people make the argument now we shouldn't call it the FISA court. We should maybe call it the DISA court, the Domestic Intelligence Surveillance Court. But the question there is, well, you know, why are they going with FISA and what else is going on? Well, the reason they need the FISA court to back them up with the metadata is because ultimately it's the metadata that they're going to use against people when and if they use everything that they have against them in court. So now here's the big thing. NSA collects everything. NSA collects word for word content of every phone call communication, of every email, of every Skype message system, of everything, of all the Facebook and all the Google and all that other information too. They collect everything. It's all automated by systems. So they'll give you the argument, well, we don't intercept. Well, their twisted little definition of intercept is for having a human being sit down and look at something. Of course, there's only so many analysts that could do that, especially when you're literally collecting everything and then you're storing it indefinitely. So that was one question. In all of those hearings that you see Keith Alexander and the rest of the parade of these folks to Congress, where they were practically lauded as heroes, they were coming, like Caesar coming back from the Rhine in victory, no one asked them the tough questions or the big question: is NSA collecting everything? And they are, and that's the sad truth, unfortunately.
And of course, we also saw recently, of course, people like Clapper and others trying to get out of this by trying to put twisted definitions on collecting. But you hit on an important point here, which is the way that they try to obfuscate what's going on by using semantics, etc. But the point is, as far as I understand, this has been known about for several years now, since Mark Klein, at the very least, blew the whistle on Room 641A at the San Francisco AT&T facility, where the NSA was was splitting off the fiber optics at the trunk there, that coming into the country, and basically splitting it off and copying everything that was coming in wholesale. That's my understanding of what's happening really at the end of this, and that's why they have access to the information on Google's and Facebook's and Apple's and all those other companies' servers, whether or not those companies know it or admit it. It's because that this is actually being done at the infrastructure level. Perhaps you can shed more insight into that. Is that a correct understanding, or is there something else going on here?
That's correct as far as the terrestrial element of what's going on. And it wasn't, of course, just AT&T. It was all the other frame room, big frame room, the hubs across the United States for all the other big telecoms as well. So it was basically everything. And I think his specialty, I think, was the internet side of that. But it was also telephone calls. So, you know, people are, you know, back then, you know, like when I was first went on Keith Urban's show, you know, I told him back then, because what I knew was only the metadata. But back then, NSA didn't have the capability to go after everything. Now, there's a few reasons. One was they didn't have the computer processing capability to go after to process everything. The second was they didn't have the electricity. They literally didn't have the power, especially at Fort Meade, to go after everything. They were literally, for more than a couple of years, they were making everyone at all the folks at NSA freeze during the winter and roast during the summer, because they were cutting back on heating and air conditioning to pump more electricity into those vast computers that they were setting up, and they didn't have the electricity to run everything. So that's kind of funny, but it was actually happening. You ask any NSA employee that's been there for a while, and they'll confirm that. The big item was they did not have the storage capability. So, you know, once you collect something, it's just like if you're a hoarder or something, and you're always going to flea markets, and you're buying stuff, and your house is only so big, you only have so much room to put stuff into. At some point, you're going to be busting at the seams, and NSA had that problem with data. Hence, they were upgrading facilities at Fort Meade as best they could. They were going to other places in Texas and in Georgia, and then ultimately the key was to build this Bluffdale, Utah facility out west. So that was how they were going to deal with it. The other thing was they decided that they were just going to collect everything and not deal so much with the filtering and processing of everything, which really is the big computer crunching element of what's going on. Collect everything and then save it for indefinitely into the future, and then later on at some point they can go back and they want to go, okay, we want to know what Mr. Corbett said in the last 7 years or whatever, for some reason, and they go back and they pull out all your information, all the conversations you've had in the last 7 years, and then they process that information and then probably boil it down to where they have human analysts looking at it. But the big thing is,
give us an overview of that that physical layout, so that the actual storage is taking place at somewhere like the Utah data center, but where is the actual processing taking place, and under whose auspices? Is this Cyber Command, or is this some other? Is it the NSA itself?
It's the NSA itself. Yeah, this is under NSA. Now, Cyber Command is dealing with other elements of you know, cyber capability and offensive cyber, for that matter, and supposedly protecting government and military communications. That element is supposed to be under STRATCOM, Strategic Command, which is in Offutt, Nebraska. And ultimately, the general in charge of STRATCOM is a 4-star general. Yet, they promoted Keith Alexander at NSA to become a 4-star general so that he could run both NSA and STRATCOM, which was nothing but
CyberCom.
CyberCom. So, it was kind of a joke. None of this stuff is being centered in Nebraska. It's all being centered at Fort Meade, Maryland, at NSA's headquarters, and the two golf courses that we all love have been destroyed so that they could put all these new facilities in there. So people that are golfers are not real happy about that, because they haven't replaced the golf courses. But anyhow, that's where it's all going, our former golf courses, for all these new buildings. But that's where a lot of this is going. Now, some of the crunching is also was sent to, and this was reported by Jim Bamford, to Tennessee, to the former nuclear research facilities in Oak Ridge in Tennessee. Now, why would they go to Tennessee? Because they have supercomputers in Tennessee, and they can crunch big numbers there. So, once again, we need processing capability, and Oak Ridge has big-time processing.
Well, you've touched on a lot of important things already, so let's back up for a second. For example, as people may have noticed, the mainstream media coverage has been focusing on what I think is this red herring of the metadata, which, of course, is part of what's been released with this latest leak, but, of course, is only scratching the surface of, as you say, the collection of all of the electronic communications wholesale content and metadata, but the focus on metadata, I think, might be for specific legal reasons. I mean, we're starting to see some interesting things. In fact, the Sun Sentinel was just reporting last week, bank robbery suspect wants NSA phone records for his defense. So now we have bank robbery suspects trying to subpoena data from the NSA that would supposedly exonerate them because they know that all of these records are being kept and stored and all of the content is tracked. So this opens up all sorts of legal worms that obviously the U.S. government doesn't even want the public to know exists. Perhaps you can speak to some of those types of issues that this data collection raises.
Well, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so I think it's a fat chance that they're going to allow the NSA to give up that information to a suspected bank robber for his discovery, proceedings in whatever his court case is. NSA has always fallen back to things like state secret privilege and sovereign immunity. When they get basically pinned into a corner, in a couple cases out on the West Coast, where they literally had the goods on NSA as far as knowing that they had spied on like lawyers. For some of these cases out west, but the courts, of course, have always capitulated and just fallen like a house of cards whenever NSA wants whatever they want. But you got to wonder what NSA has on the courts. Now, another thing I didn't mention was my specific the way I found out initially this was all happening was because I'm a satellite system specialist. And the stuff I do is from outer space via satellites. And this was also being done against American citizens via satellite and my special capabilities in space. So that's how I initially got into it. That's how I found out about it. And then ultimately the terrestrial end, which is what Mr. Klein exposed, his element in there in San Francisco. Then I got into into touch with the folks at NSA that were involved in that terrestrial aspect. And that's when we were getting together and comparing notes. We were doing it very carefully as far as our communications. And that's when we realized how vast and how just incredible this was, what was going on.
And it has been an incredible ordeal for you and the other NSA whistleblowers who have stepped forward. And having stepped forward, obviously, there's still been all sorts of pitfalls and landmines along the way. Perhaps you can talk about your experience blowing the whistle and even testifying to Congress and some of the pitfalls and landmines that you had to step around in order to avoid being caught up in their dragnet yourself.
Well, it's... I knew initially from the very beginning that I couldn't trust NSA's Inspector General's office, which is sort of like their internal investigative office, because they were basically owned by the security office at NSA. Security, which is called Q Group, formerly M Group, is run by a vicious, Cheka-minded person, a guy named Kemp Enser. This guy is a piece of work. This guy's vicious. Sadistic sociopath, basically. At least in my opinion, that's from everything I've seen of this guy, that's what he is. But anyhow, that's my opinion. As soon as I found out about this, and then I started probing what was going on in the, basically, I did it by, because I got support from where this was happening with my space side of this, and the folks that gave me support, and they were very good at their support, I was going to write them up because I was a position, you know, of authority that I could write them up for an award. And in the process of writing them up for award for their support, of course, everyone likes a pat on the back, I was also asking questions like, oh, you know, that was really great what you gave me and everything. Well, you know, what else was involved in getting that information? And, I was sort of stoking their egos a little bit and telling them that I was going to give them an award for what they had done, but I was also fishing for as much information as technically as what was going on and how they were doing it, because I'm a space system specialist myself, so I know all the technology that's involved. And when I did that, the security came down on me like a ton of lead. So that's when they came after me, sent me to have an emergency psychological evaluation, of which I didn't need one. I just had one 9 months, or my routine psych eval 9 months earlier, and passed with flying colors. And now all of a sudden I'm going for an emergency psych eval, after which I was declared nuts. Imagine that. I went from being perfectly sane to nuts in 9 months. So what they were doing was they realized that I'd found out about it, and they were trying to mitigate the possibility that I could ultimately blow the whistle on it by taking my security clearance, not revoking it, but just suspending it, sending me to the motor pool to drive cars around to be fixed and gassed up and the oil changed and, you know, just stupidity like that, which was my punishment. And basically the message was, you keep your mouth shut, you pay your penance, and I think they wanted some groveling as well. And then in a certain period of time, we'll let you have your job back, and you'll know to keep your mouth shut forever about this. So that's sort of how this whole thing started.
Well, let's talk about the implications of what this really means on the bigger scale, because I think the big elephant in the room that I don't hear anyone talking about is the incredible, if knowledge is power, then the knowledge that comes with a collection of all interception of all communications in the United States and around the world is just an incredible amount of power that obviously can be used politically. And obviously, I think the number one implication of all of this is the power that can be used via blackmail. The question, of course, is if the NSA is listening to everything, then doesn't that mean they're listening to Congress, they're listening to judges, they're listening to senators and everyone in between? Can you tell us from your own experience about who is falling under this dragnet and what kind of information is being collected from people like that?
Well, remember, right now, it's everything on everybody. So everyone falls into that category. But back then, in my day, and this initially with my satellite stuff was 2002 and 2003, and ultimately, after I was getting in touch with the folks that were doing the terrestrial stuff, it was 2004, 2005 time frame. We were getting our hands on the paperwork that involved targeting specific types of groups and types of individuals. That's when I went on Keith Olbermann's show, and I said, and the only thing I mentioned there were journalists and news organizations and reporters. Now, I would have thought back then that would have sparked a big enough interest in the press to know that they were targeted themselves, but no one in the press seemed to care. And I kind of took that as a recognition that the press did not believe me, and or was taking the line from NSA that, you know, you're talking to a crazy guy. So I realized back then that swift boating effort that they had done against me was still working against me even then, and that I needed something much more substantial. In other words, I needed some other folks to come out and help me, and ultimately, I needed someone like Mr. Snowden to really put out the tangible evidence, which is kind of what he's doing. So what was the original question? I think I've lost my.
Well, talking
right
about
there.
The types of people who were targeted for this back in the time when the people that you actually know firsthand were targeted by this type of surveillance.
Yeah, it was journalists. It was members of Congress, both houses, Senate and the House, especially on the intelligence committees, in the Armed Services committees, and on Judiciary committees. And as well as the senior leadership in both the House and the Senate. It was judges, federal judges, and every member of the Supreme Court, all nine, of which I held the initial targeting of Judge Alito in my hand when Judge Alito was being put up for his position on the Supreme Court. So I saw the Alito paperwork in my hand. Physically, it was members of a few members of Bush's own staff in the White House, and I thought, as far as Congress, it was both Republicans and Democrats. It wasn't you think Bush was in the White House, they'd only go after Republicans or Democrats. Wrong. They went after everybody. So. I can give you an example of the guy they went after at the White House. What was his name? Scott McClellan? Scott, the PR guy who takes questions from everybody. What do you call that?
I think McClellan. Let me just check.
Yeah. Spokesman, I guess, the official spokesman press secretary. That's it, the press secretary. They went after him and a bunch of, I think, his staff people. So this is some of their own folks. Who else did they? They went after lots of lawyers and law firms, I noticed.
In your interview on Boiling Frogs Post, you mentioned specifically General Petraeus.
Yes, they went after senior military leaders. With my satellite stuff, I saw how they went after. They went after the State Department. They went after Colin Powell, Secretary of State. They went after General Sasaki. And then on the terrestrial side, I saw the paperwork as they were going after General Petraeus. That would have been the Sasaki and Powell would have been the 2002-03 time frame. Petraeus would have been somewhere in 04, maybe summer 04 time frame. They had Petraeus, and they had other generals too, and other senior folks. So it wasn't just Petraeus. Who else did they go? They went after, like I said, lots of law firms, lots of lawyers and law firms. They went after U.S. companies that do a lot of international business. They went after financial companies. And they went after just regular, companies that do big time, international business.
So define this for us. When you say you saw the paperwork for this, what type of paperwork was this? Was this FISA paperwork to try to get the wiretaps approved or something different?
No. No, as far as I could say, I didn't see anything official FISA anything. Remember, this was that particular, this time frame would have been from 02 to 05 we're talking about. And what I would see is what would be like a handwritten name, say General Petraeus. And then you'd see a bunch of phone numbers. You'd see what ultimately would probably, in some cases we could track this down. A lot of times we had unlisted phone numbers. So we had one person of our team who would go to a place where they, couldn't track their internet search and try to look, you go through the people search and you look up numbers and stuff to try to, figure out who people are. A lot of the stuff was unlisted, but some of it wasn't. And that's how, of course, the name on the paper was Petraeus handwritten, bunch of numbers. And that's where we checked out some of those numbers. But what was happening was someone was going in and the system that was being used back then had no internal auditing capability. And I think they built the system that way on purpose so that no one could come in at some point and look at auditing files as to who was plugging in these phone numbers to go after these people. Now that was the phones. The system that I was looking at was another system that was going after emails, and that was the system that was going after everybody's email as well, to go and dig into their whatever emails they were doing. But the stuff that I particularly had my hands on terrestrially was the phone stuff, conversations like we're having now, and phone numbers. And I would see that information, and then what was happening is someone was taking the number from all these numbers, they were plugging them into the system so that NSA would target those numbers, and then there would be a printout of those numbers and all the different whole series of alphanumeric numbers, sequence numbers that related to digital recording capabilities and storage capability. In other words, where the systems were that this information would be recorded and where it would be stored. That was what I was seeing as far as the spit out from the system itself, and the handwritten stuff was numbers and names. So what I imagine what was happening, and the folks that I said that think this was happening in the evening hours when most NSA employees were gone, that this was happening in the evening, and someone was going in the system, plugging in this information, and making sure that what we think they were taking back with them was the name of the person and the nomenclature of where to find the data, where it would be stored. So...
was there any way for you to know who was actually doing this? Was it just random analysts, or was this coming from higher up?
This was coming from higher up. This was now one of our senior guys believes that this was actually Dick Cheney, his office, that this was being directed from down in D.C., that this was coming up from Cheney's office. So that's what he believed. But
there was nothing on the paperwork to indicate where this was.
Absolutely not.
Right?
No. Yeah. No. It wasn't as directed by the vice president. No, it didn't say that or it has some vice president stamp on it. It certainly did not. This was all handwritten stuff and then ultimately the spit out from the system. Now, these guys were getting this information from the burn bags. The burn bags are bags with these stripes and the orange and yellow and white stripes on them that you throw all your classified stuff into, and then when it gets filled up to a certain extent, you staple it and you write the classification on it, and it gets destroyed. And everyone's using the burn bags, and okay, that's to be destroyed. Well, that's where the proof of the pudding was in the burn bags, and that's where my contacts inside NSA were getting the information and pulling it out, and then we would have our little meetings where we'd look over what we had and what they had, and we were all just flabbergasted at what was going on. And that was the 2004-2005 time frame when we were having those get-togethers with what.
So I'm a little confused then. If this if the handwritten notes, what would be the point of even writing that down if this was just going to end up in the burn bag anyway?
Well, someone had to get the information of who these people were and what their phone numbers were.
So this was someone filling this out in order to get someone else to actually do the wiretap.
Well, the system, you had to have, if I wanted you, and all, say you have, I don't know, your phone and you have a staff of folks and everyone has their own cell phone and their own personal house phone and everything. And someone has to know that information and then plug it into the system for the system to say, okay, I have these numbers. These numbers are now using these recording systems, and all that information is being put onto these digital, nomenclature systems of where it's being stored. So that's what's happening there. The system at NSA doesn't intuitively know the numbers to go after at that time. You have to plug that stuff in.
Was Barack Obama targeted by this?
Yes, he was. As a matter of fact, that was in 2004, probably late summer time frame. And he was a candidate for senator. He'd already won his primary in Illinois, and that's when I saw Barack Obama's name. And the only reason it kind of struck a note was because, and maybe the reason he was targeted, was because he just had a fantastic speech at the Democratic National Convention for the 2004 campaign. Now, I never saw John Kerry's information, but the guys that I was there, we all assumed that they already had it, though no one had seen them go after Kerry. But we just assumed that if they were going after these other folks, they probably went after John Kerry too. But I never saw it. But I did see Barack Obama's.
So is there any way at all, from your perspective, to know A, what information specifically was being gleaned from this, and B, how that information was being used?
I do not know. I don't know. I do not know. If that was extracted somewhere down the line and used, I don't know what it was used for. I don't know what it was used for. I just know that that they were targeted and that the information was being collected.
Well, then let's step into the land of speculation for a moment. And of course, this is speculation and should be denoted as such. But then given the absolute total power that comes with this type of incredible information and access to that information, what does that make someone like General Keith Alexander or the people who were in the NSA? Does that not make them the de facto rulers of the United States, at least insofar as their ability to blackmail Congress is now basically unquestionably sealed?
Well, let's think back to J. Edgar Hoover. What kind of power did J. Edgar Hoover have? Seems to me he didn't have to worry about job security with the information and capabilities he had. Of course, if I have the dirt on everybody everywhere, I can pretty much, call you into my office and say, hey, you want to be the mayor, you want to be whatever, we certainly wouldn't want this information to get out there. And then whatever my whim is, I can exert that on the person that I have that information on. It's classical blackmail. Was that happening? I do not know. But I mean, I know NSA has, since 9/11, has been getting tens of billions of dollars. I know that this sequester that's been affecting most everybody else in the federal government has not really been affecting the intelligence community. They've been exempt from it. And that they're building, they've beefed up, NSA's pretty much beefed up hundreds of millions of dollars into all of their different out sites, and as well as their facilities and building new buildings at Fort Meade proper, and this humongous new facility out in Utah at Bluffdale. So money situation is not a problem for NSA. They have more money than they're swimming in the stuff. It might be a problem for some other agencies or for somebody else, but it's certainly not a problem at NSA. So I have to wonder, is the intelligence community exerting influence to make sure that, that the intelligence community is taken care of? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that they have targeted key people that make those kind of decisions.
And we can think of recent examples, even when you look at someone like General Petraeus. Obviously, there's no indication that the information that was used against him came from NSA wiretaps, but at any rate, it does go to show that personal emails and the like can be used at any time to bring down some of these people who otherwise would be treated with kid gloves.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I don't know for sure, but was there some kind of turf battle? I mean, Petraeus became this director of CIA. Did he challenge the supremacy of Emperor Alexander in the process or something? And Emperor Alexander said, "Okay, you want to do that? Then I'm going to put the hammer down on you." I don't know. I do know Alexander's been there for like 9 years, and it looks like he's decided. He's pretty much built himself a throne in the intelligence community. So this is all conjecture on our part, of course, but it's disturbing to have to think that this could be happening.
And when we look at someone like General Alexander, it's of course not only his intelligence role, but also his military role, and it's the combination of the two, which means that there's such power invested in his particular position there as the head of the NSA and the head of Cybercom. How could a foreign entity like China or any other foreign entity look at that and then look at the recent NSA revelations, quote unquote, from Snowden, which I think everyone understood anyway, that the NSA is spying on China and Chinese mainland non-military related computers. How could they look at that as anything other than a covert and an undeclared act of war against those foreign powers? And what does this mean for the future development of the concept of cyber war?
Well, I will not discuss anything NSA or I did against foreign powers, and that was my job. Was NSA's charter is to go against foreign communications, and my particular job in information warfare, in offensive information warfare, was to basically work operations that sort of did some unpleasant things to other folks' communications and such. So, and I'm not going to say who they were or where they were, but my job was doing dirty tricks with electrons. And like I said, my specialty was outer space. So, I worked anything that was in or through space. But I'm not going to get into specifics about any target, especially overseas, because that was our mission. But what I do talk about and what I was highly upset about was the fact that our capabilities were turned illegally and unconstitutionally against the American public. And that's when I just went, anyone at NSA knew that was against the law, that it was a violation of our Constitution, it was a violation of presidential order, and it was a violation of NSA's own internal directives under what's called USID 18. And it's something that's pounded into your head, especially, for someone like myself who had been in the intelligence business for 20 years since I got out of college. I went right out of, from college, I went right into the Air Force, into the intelligence world. So my entire career, I've been doing this stuff, and now all of a sudden I find out that the capabilities and the incredible capabilities of this agency that I loved was being turned against my own people. And that's when, ultimately when they brought down the retribution against me, I could never have just kept my mouth quiet, did nothing, and just go back to work and be just another one of the proles who prodded around and took the big check home and kept my mouth shut.
Well, as we mentioned at the top of the interview, all of this seems to be coming to a head in the last few weeks. And of course, we saw the buildup to this with the AP spying story, sort of in some ways a rehash of what you'd already been talking about for years, that yes, the government is spying on journalists. But that fed into an interesting revelation that I pointed out in a recent eye-opener report from Tim Clemente, talking about how the FBI has access to content of phone conversations at any time in national security investigations, should they wish to use that, but they don't want to talk about that. That seemed to be a major revelation that flew completely under the radar. And then it was shortly thereafter we had Snowden coming out and talking about this, and the conversation turns once again to metadata and seems to go off of the main point, which is the collection of the content of all electronic communications. Do you find anything suspicious about the timing of this release or in the way in which Snowden was able to bring this to the public's attention?
I don't know specifically. It sounds to me, from what I've heard, that Mr. Snowden was already in the process of gathering his information and determining, what he thought would be, illegal, unconstitutional activity that he could report, versus the things that he legitimately thought were national security interests that should not be divulged. But, I also, and this was, well over a month now, I saw those reports in CNN with Mr. Clemente. And I think at first I saw it on Aaron Burnett on CNN, and then somebody, Carol Costello. And when he said, that it's coming from the intelligence community and that it was national security oriented and that they could go back in the past, that's when I got in touch with my source at NSA. and we scheduled a face-to-face, and we discussed it. And ultimately, he had to make sure that it was something that was definitely happening, and I got that that assurance that that NSA truly was doing that just not too long ago. So, yes, they're going after content. They're collecting the content. They're digitally storing it indefinitely, everything. So,
then let's talk about the media's role in this story, because Snowden supposedly initially went to the Washington Post and to the Guardian, and one of his conditions for the story was that he wanted the entire PowerPoint to be released all at once, and the Guardian and Washington Post ended up publishing just 4 slides so far, and with promise of more revelations to come. But this seems to be a pattern that we've seen all too much with whistleblowers lately, which is the media is now vetting all of their leaks before they leak them. Talk about that process and the types of things that you saw, for example, with the New York Times story.
Well, I was aware that the New York Times had what they had. And you know, I was basically the spokesperson for this little group, because, you know, these people still work at NSA. They don't want their careers destroyed. Mine was already being destroyed. So, and they sort of say that I have a, you know, sort of a dominant personality, and I don't like to be kicked, and I fight when someone kicks me. So that's kind of why I was chosen. And that's true. I do have that kind of personality. If you punch me and knock me down, I'm getting up with my dukes up, and we're going to go at it. That's my personality. You know, these things, you know, it's hard to believe this was happening. I've lost my thought.
Well, have you been contacted by the mainstream media for comment on the latest revelations?
No, I have not. I've had my last, because I sort of let it be known from my last few interviews that I was willing to go well in advance and explain, because I've always said this thing was far worse than anyone knew. And I sort of left it at that. And of course, what does that mean? Well, now I'm telling you how far worse it really was. And as I was telling this to some of these news organizations that were going to put me on camera, my last 4 camera interviews have been canceled, all 4. So one of them, I was literally in the town car where they were driving me to the interview down in D.C., and we were literally approaching the place where the interview was to take place, As I got the call and said they were canceling the interview because of their lawyers. Now, go back to Mr. Snowden's information and the Washington Post, and we find out that the reporter that was dealing with that, which was Mr. Gelman, I think was his name, and I had one interview with him years ago. Bart Gelman, is that right?
That sounds right, yes.
Yeah, but he said he wasn't even working with the regular reporting area. He had a small desk in where all the lawyers sat in the New York Times office in Washington D.C. Washington Post office. Well, why would he be sitting right there with the lawyers? Well, I think I said this before. I'll bet you dollars to donuts that the lawyers were vetting everything he said and were kind of putting the thumb on him as to how much, you know, or if anything, they were going to release. So, like I said, I don't know this for sure, but I can imagine Mr. Snowden was pretty upset at the lack of production, especially being that he was putting his neck out on the line. Now, I sort of saw this with the New York Times back in, you know, the things that I was ultimately involved with, and I was a source of information for the New York Times, and I knew that they had something on NSA, and I was waiting patiently for them to drop that information, and it wasn't happening. So we're waiting and waiting. The guys at the Ford are saying, when is he going to do it? And I said, I don't know. And the big thing for us was the reconfirmation of the Patriot Act was coming. We wanted that information to get out before they reconfirmed or re-upped the Patriot Act. We wanted the American people to know what was going, you know, that NSA was violating the law before the Patriot Act was reenacted. So, in I think it was the 15th of December 2005, I called a reporter for the Washington Times. His name was Bill Gertz. And I said to Bill, I said, Bill, I have this huge story, and you're really going to want to deal, you're really going to want this story, and I want to talk to you right now. And he goes, Russ, I can't do anything. I'm writing this book, and my publishers are steaming down, you know, are breathing down my neck about getting this book done. You know, after that, I can do the story. And I said, it has to be done now. And he said, well, you know, am I going to hear about it? I said, yep, you're going to hear about it real soon. So I hung up with Bill, and I was getting in contact with a reporter from the Chicago Tribune, who I knew worked on national security issues. And when I was in the process of trying to find that phone number, the next day, finally the Time story came out. Now, I think that was coincidence, but it was we were kind of fed up, and then it just so happens that, you know, I was going to spill it all to Bill Gertz, and when he wasn't going to deal with it, to this fellow up at the Chicago Tribune. But then it came out. But what came out from the Times wasn't everything. You know, they were saying that it was just foreign communications. That was wrong. It was more than foreign communications. It was domestic communications as well. And of course, I knew a fact about all these other things, but I couldn't tell the two reporters from the New York Times, because I knew that their phones were tapped, and they were looking at me like, because I was trying to go through some very extreme means of communications with them, and they're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Carrier pigeons?
And look what NSA did to me. They already pinned the crazy pin on me in the first place. So I'm like, gee, you know, if I tell these guys that, you know, I want to go through this extreme means of communication, they're just thinking, well, this guy really is crazy. So, I mean, I'm walking a tightrope, you know, as far as that's all concerned. Jim and Eric at the Eric Lichtschwall and Jim Risen, were totally blind to the wiretapping of their comms. And we would go places, and we'd have FBI crawling all over us, and they were blind at this surveillance, the physical surveillance that was around us. We went to a restaurant about 2:30 in the day. The restaurant was empty, and we go into the back corner of the restaurant, and then all of a sudden, when normally this restaurant would be, you know, that a dead time of the day, all the tables around where we work got filled up with people. So they were all FBI morons. All of them, and Eric and Jim were just totally, you know, blind as to the surveillance that was taking place. And I kept looking at them, going, "Hey, you notice anything, guys? This is your favorite restaurant. You know, this is normally a dead time of the day. Look how busy this corner of the restaurant is." You know, and they just totally did not get it. So
it almost sounds like willful ignorance at a certain point.
You know, I just think it's the, you know, and they know better now, but they've had this mentality that, you know, that they can just kind of, you know, freelance and do what they want, and that no one, because I guess of their, you know, their, you know, sacred First Amendment to the Constitution, would dare, you know, come after them for, you know, something like that. They did, and they dared, and I was in a position where, you know, how far do I push it? Because I've already got the crazy sticker put on my forehead by NSA, you know, on purpose. And I know these guys' phones are tapped word for word. And that happened when their stupid publishers went to the government. And that's another thing. NSA had a witch hunt that was going on before any of this information, and this is, I know from the source that I've recently talked to, there was a witch hunt going on within NSA because they knew that information was coming out that Snowden was providing, and I'm assuming that was because the Washington Post had gone to the government with information, and that was before apparently Snowden was in a position where he could be safe. So, like I said, I don't know for sure whether that, but what I do know for sure is there was the witch hunt that was going, that they were all going nuts at NSA before Snowden came out with what he did. And it was because of the information that he released. So I'm assuming, and I suspect that information may have been because the Washington Post, like the Times did, went to the government and said, look what we have. Can we get your response? And then, of course, the government has the information. You don't think as soon as the government gets that information, the next exact phone call they're going to make is right to NSA and say, holy crap, guess what, guys? Yeah, guess what they got?
It's mind-boggling to suspect that wouldn't happen, and I can't imagine that they wouldn't expect that. But I mean, it must be part of the intimidation that's going on right now, that journalists want to make sure that they're not going to be personally held responsible for what gets put out.
And of course they got lawyers involved, and it's all this, when was reporting the news something that's going to, you're going to be sued over and held personally responsible for? I thought that was the whole idea of the First Amendment to our Constitution. As far as a whistleblower is concerned, and perhaps Mr. Snowden realized this from my case and from some of the other, guys that have gone through this and that you put this information to some of these guys, and then all of a sudden the first thing they want to do is hang you by just leaking the information right to the powers that be. I mean, this happened with Mark Klein and the information, Los Angeles Times out when he was initially trying to get the information out. So, the LA Times did the same thing to him. Now, fortunately, he didn't have a security clearance where he could get in big trouble over that. But they dumped the information to the government. The information, and it went right to NSA. And then bingo, they're running around finding out, trying to do damage assessments and figure out how they're going to, shore up the breach in the wall. So, maybe Mr. Snowden realized that from all of our experiences that that he felt that he had to get out of Dodge before things really hit the fan. But I don't know that for sure.
So then, just to be clear, your last four on-camera interviews that were all canceled were with mainstream American media outlets.
That's correct. Yeah.
And they were all canceled within the past few weeks, or is this a longer period of time?
Within the past week.
Yeah. Okay. So again, we see, I think we can understand what's happening behind the scenes with that. All right. Well, there's just so much to go through here, but I don't want to overwhelm the listeners. And I think that what we've talked about so far is already so incredibly important. But is there anything else that you'd like to add to listeners' understanding of what's been going on and what the way this has been released so far?
Well, I think everyone's trying to figure out. Well, I mean, there's a lot of vilification right now going on against Mr. Snowden. This guy apparently is a computer, very good with computers, and he wasn't an analyst. So he's looking at information. He's not an analyst for the information, which it's a big difference. I'd have more intelligence background and understanding of the information more than he did. But the whole idea is apparently he's got briefings that try to explain what's going on from the technical avenue to like higher ups that don't have that kind of. So basically, some of these briefings are designed for, you know, putting this thing in layman's terms. If he went by the experience that myself and other people had with the whole whistleblower thing, we found out you cannot trust the internal mechanisms, and so you can't trust the chain of command, you can't trust the whatever department's IG office, you can't trust the director's office. All of them were going to put a rope around you and hang you. You can't trust the OIC, Office of Special Investigation, because the intelligence community is exempt from them. You can't trust the Merit System Protection Board to help you out, because they're exempt from that too, unless you have a military background, which I did, and I went to the Merit System Protection Board, and they just laughed at me and said, we don't care about the people that have with security clearances, and just go away. Case dismissed. So it's a joke. Even if you, on rare occasion, because of my military background, you're allowed to go, they laugh at you and say, get out of our courtroom. Then you go to Congress. Well, Congress was reporting everything I told them. Everything I was telling Congress was going right back to NSA from the staffers. And Sybil Edmonds was pushing me to do some testimony. And then I'm getting my sources back at NSA telling me that everything I'm telling them is coming right back to NSA. And they're all salivating at the fact that they might get some goods on me via what I tell Congress so that they can hang me with. So Congress itself was acting as a mechanism to try to have me hung. So I can't trust Congress. And then I finally did testify, and I think you have a little bit of that. I was being extremely careful what I told Congress. I was being extremely careful what I said in the press, because they were trying to hang me, and I knew it. So I was walking a tightrope, walking on the edge of a razor, and one false move would have been it for me. So, when they said in Congress, were you cleared for the TSP program? Well, no, I wasn't. And as a matter of fact, there was no such thing as a TSP program at NSA. Terrorist surveillance program was made up by someone, I guess, in the administration to make it sound palatable to the American people, to make them think that, oh, if we're only going after, if we're surveilling terrorists, so that's a good thing. Of course, that was all nonsense. It was designed to fool the American people by pasting, a nice go after the bad guy's name on it. So the whole process that I went through, I came to the conclusion, and so did Sybil, and so did Tom Drake, and so did Bill Binney, and so did Kurt Wybie, and so did some of these other folks, that the internal system and every aspect that, when you see all these folks on TV saying, well, there's mechanisms to go to internally to voice your concerns, that's BS. There is no mechanism internally that is designed to help you. Those internal mechanisms are ultimately designed to hang you. And that's what we found out. And perhaps that's what Mr. Snowden, after maybe he did some research and found out that we all found that out the hard way, and he decided to go another way. I don't know for sure. I'd have to ask that question to Mr. Snowden.
Well, there are indications that he has done his research on this, and he has said explicitly in a recent live chat about his experience, he has said that the types of measures that are being taken against whistleblowers will only encourage whistleblowers in the future to be more resourceful and to basically reveal the information in a bigger way. Do you think that what Snowden has done is likely to bring more people forward from the NSA to talk about this, or do you think that this will be the type of thing that will ultimately serve to silence the whistleblowers as they look at the way that he's retaliated against?
Well, I think that all of it is designed to silence potential whistleblowers. The retaliation that was leveled against myself and Tom Drake, I had to go to the court when they threw the charges at, you know, they were throwing charges at me for under the Espionage Act to the grand jury, a federal grand jury. So, you know, I dealt with it too. Now I didn't give them anything to go on, but it's, and I certainly wasn't going to put the rope around my own neck, but, you know, so yeah, I dealt with that too. They just didn't bring charges against me because they didn't have enough information to come after me because I was being a little too cautious. And like I said, you know, myself and the folks at NSA, we know how to handle covert communications. but anyhow, it's what they're doing now is they're doing everything they can to get him back here, so that they can put him in a jail cell for the rest of his life. And whistleblowers have to see that they're going out of their way to make sure they get this guy, because they cannot have this guy get away with this, because that gives hope to potential whistleblowers. So, you know, they've slammed all the rest of us and mitigated and swift-boated us destroyed our careers and sent us to grand juries, and in some cases, you know, tried us and made us spend heaps of money on lawyers and destroyed us financially. And in this case, you know, they want this guy bad. So you don't think potential whistleblowers see that as well?
Sadly, they undoubtedly do. Well, again, we've been talking for quite a while, so just my last question here. This is obviously an extremely dispiriting topic for people out there who are listening and who are finding out, perhaps for the first time, that every single electronic communication that they do is being collected. Is there anything that the average person can do to protect their communications?
Unfortunately, no. NSA is very good at what they do. There is no encryption that you're probably going to come up with that they don't already have something to deal with it. Or that they don't, yeah, I mean, there's a matter of fact, you know, we go to some of these companies, there was a 1999 report about software for Microsoft Windows that had a key code word on it that ultimately wasn't erased, and it was apparently a backdoor port or something. And on the designator in the designation line for the code, the software code, it said NSA key. So,
I wonder.
That was in 1999. That was reported. So, you know, this is not a new thing. Now, you know, I don't know if Microsoft has been one of the companies that's come out and said, we deny, you know, all this is happening kind of stuff. But, you know, NSA has had their hooks into the entire United States computer world and communication world for many years. And what Mr. Snowden is doing is he's basically showing the American people the proof of this intangible, hold in your hands, you know, on a paper and ink. And as far as I'm concerned, I applaud him for what he's done. For many years, I was the lone wolf in the wilderness. I was the only guy out there, you know, long before Bill Binney and Tom Drake ever came out. I was the lone whistleblower from NSA who you know, got the crazy pin put on him, saying that, you know, they're going after journalists and they're going after millions of people. And that was in my congressional testimony, you know, when I think you have a piece of that. And all these things that I've said that I could say that have been confirmed, everything's been confirmed. So these guys have basically, you know, corroborated everything that I've said in the past, up until now. So I have to thank them for that, and their safety in numbers. So, you know, like I say to some of my folks at NSA, I said, you know, even if you have to wait until you retire, you know, it's important that you come out and help the rest of us that are fighting this monster, because, you know, we need help. This this is a vicious, you know, we've created this monster that's going to consume us, and it has to be stopped. That's kind of, you know, the bottom line.
Well, on that note, this is, I think, one of the most important stories that's out there right now, so we will be continuing to cover it here on Corbett Report and in all my other work and Boiling Frogs Post and elsewhere besides, so I certainly hope we'll be able to have you on in the future to continue covering this. But Russ Tice, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate you're taking the effort to try to get this information out, because it would seem so far that the mainstream media doesn't really care to hear this information. So hopefully that will change, and that you can be a catalyst to sort of, you know, shake them a little bit and say, hey, you know, wake up and you know, do your job.
Well, I will do what I can on my end, but I think that it's up to the listeners out there to understand just how important the information we're talking about right now is, and I certainly hope they'll take it upon themselves to help spread this information as well. So on that note, once again, Russ Tice, thank you again for your time.
Thanks again. Bye.